Today is August 18th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com or phone 206-202-0647.
Apple CEO Steve Jobs purchased 120,000 shares of Apple stock this week. Executives from Inventec Appliances Corporation are facing jail time for profiting from insider iPod information, and John Lennon's solo works are finally available at the iTunes Store. On the iPhone front, one analyst is concerned that the iPhone touchscreen will degrade over time. Hackers have found a new way to unlock the iPhone for use with any cell carrier, and rumors of an iPhone clone are coming out of China. And finally, Apple released an update for iWeb 08, and David Pogue was less than impressed with iMovie 08.
And in Apple Weekly Report news, we'd like to let our listeners know that we have been hard at work on the logistical and technical side of making this podcast.
Yeah, that's right. We've been working on our sound quality, which several listeners have let us know has improved. Thanks for that. And we've been continuing to experiment with our mic technique to remove all traces of mic pops that other listeners have sent us a note about.
And we've also been working on our publishing schedule. The Apple Weekly Report has traditionally been scheduled for a Saturday air date, but technical issues had delayed the last few episodes until Monday. This episode hopefully marks a return to a regular Saturday schedule, and we should be even closer to having consistent, outstanding sound quality.
And thanks to everyone who has phoned, written, or commented on the site about these issues. We don't have a podcast without you, and we appreciate all the feedback. Without further ado, let's hit the news.
Steve Jobs exercised an already approved option to buy company stock earlier this week and scored 120,000 shares of Apple at $5 US and 75 cents each. The purchase was part of a 1997 deal when Mr. Jobs was a company director and not yet CEO, according to Bloomberg. Mr. Jobs came out ahead on the deal since he paid more than $100 per share less than the current market value for the stock. Based on the week's closing price of $122.06, his $690,000 purchase is worth more than $14.6 million.
Unlike Mr. Jobs, several executives from the Taiwan-based Inventec Appliances Corporation didn't fare so well with their stock antics. The executives have been charged with using inside information that Apple was moving iPod production from their facility to factories in China. Since they withheld the information, they were able to time the sale of their stock in the company for maximum profit. The news was released shortly after they cashed out, and the stock dropped like a rock. Now the company chairman Jackson Chang, President Daniel Lee, and several other executives are facing the possibility of spending at least 6 years in prison.
All of the Beatles members are finally available at the iTunes Store, even though the full band's works are not. 16 of John Lennon's solo albums were added to Apple's online music store this week, including the digital premieres of Lennon Legend and Acoustic. For the next month, his John Lennon Plastic Ono Band, Somewhere in New York City, Walls and Bridges, and the Milk and Honey albums, along with anthology and working class hero collections, will be available with exclusive video content as well. The Lennon Library tracks are available as iTunes downloads for the standard 99 cents each, and also on iTunes Plus format for $1.29 each.
Switching to the iPhone, Nomura International analyst Richard Windsor is concerned that the heat-sensitive chemical layer in the iPhone display that detects touches could degrade over time, leaving users with dead spots that no longer register their fingerprints. The touch-sensing technology used in the iPhone display came from a Finnish company that went bankrupt trying to bring the technology to market. Before the company went under, it was attempting to overcome a problem where displays would lose their sensitivity after about 3 to 6 months. Apple bought the rights to the technology and, according to Mr. Windsor, likely worked to fix the sensitivity issue before bringing the iPhone to market. Recent reports of dead spots on the iPhone displays, however, are raising concerns that the company wasn't able to fully resolve the problem. Displays that are failing now have lost touch sensitivity in a half-inch wide strip, and in at least one case, the problem manifested itself after about 20 days of use. So far, Apple has responded quickly to address user concerns and replace the faulty displays.
While Apple and AT&T would both prefer that iPhone users stick with AT&T's cell service, that's not stopping people from working to unlock the combination iPhone and the combination iPod and smartphone for use with other carriers. The latest hack, and possibly the easiest to implement, comes from Bladox and its Turbo SIM card, according to iPhone World. The hack isn't as simple as plugging the Turbo SIM card into an iPhone, however. The phone needs to already be activated with AT&T and also require a Mac or Windows-based utility to, quote-unquote, jailbreak the device so that other applications could be added. Certainly not a task for anyone with a weak heart, and features like the visual voicemail don't work with other carriers. But this would allow you to be free from AT&T service if you want to take your iPhone elsewhere. Unfortunately for hopeful iPhone hackers, the Turbo SIM card is hard to come by right now. It seems everyone wants one.
TMO reader Gulmatam turned us on to this story. Chinese-based Meizu has been hard at work most of the year developing its own iPhone knockoff. It's called the Mini One. What sets the Mini One apart from the iPhone is that instead of matching the combination iPod and smartphone feature for feature, Meizu may be attempting to one-up Apple's design. Supposedly, the device will work with any cell carrier, will run more applications, and will cost less. How well the Mini One manages to pull that off remains to be seen, since Meizu's little handheld hasn't been spotted in the wild yet. So far, only images that bear a striking resemblance to the iPhone have surfaced, and most of the information about the device has come from web forums.
Apple hasn't made any public statements about the Mini One, but CEO Steve Jobs has commented in the past that his company has worked to protect the iPhone with a long list of patents, and it's presumably to defend from knockoff products like the Mini One. Defending those patents in China may be easier said than done, since the country of China does little to enforce copyrights, patents, or other intellectual property rights. Apple has used the court system outside the United States to defend its products in the past, but so far hasn't attempted to do so in China. Even if the Cupertino-based company does pursue legal action against Meizu, it's likely that nothing will happen until after the product rolls off the assembly line, because for now, the Mini One is merely vaporware.
And moving on to iLife 08, Apple has already released an update for its website design application, iWeb 2. The update fixes a problem that prevented iWeb 08 users that upgraded from iWeb 1 from importing and publishing sites designed with the earlier version of the application. The news comes as a welcome relief for iWeb 2 users that found they couldn't work with their old website projects.
iWeb users might be happy with Apple's latest bug fix, but David Polk of the New York Times isn't exactly enamored with the latest version of iMovie. He laments the loss of features found in iMovie HD06, including audio effects, themes, visual effects, the ability to export sections of movies, the lack of support for plugins, and a video editing timeline. But really, who's counting? Mr. Polk found a few redeeming features, like the ability to send a completed video to YouTube with one menu command, the high-quality color correction and frame cropping tools, and the ability to easily delete unwanted clips from your hard drive. Despite these features, he sees the new iMovie as a weak replacement for the old one. Mr. Polk summed up his feelings about iMovie 08 by saying, "One thing's for sure, it sure is an iMovie."
And in our last bit of news today, those excellent sites, the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com, announced a joint promotion with Futuresonics this week. If you post in the forums or article comments at either site between August 15th and September 9th, you'll be entered in a drawing for a pair of Futuresonics Atrio Series earphones. These earphones received a 4-star rating from iPodObserver.com, and they retail for $199. And better yet, we're giving away 4 pairs, so post often.
Yeah, you know, we really do have a great forum community at both the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. And, you know, part of that's helped by the fact that the sites share a single forum database. So if you're a member in one forum, you're a member in the other. And if you're, you know, that membership basically covers article comments and forum posts alike. And we have some great people there. So, you know, this is a heck of an opportunity for you to get to know some of them and possibly win yourself a great set of earphones.
Yeah, how can you possibly go wrong?
Well, you could accidentally poke yourself in the eye while you're doing it, but, you know, other than that, I think you're okay.
Right. So post early, post often.
Indeed. That's the news. And it's time for the context machine. That's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
And this week, I thought it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about John Lennon finally joining the iTunes store and what that might mean for the whole future of the Beatles music even.
Well, you know, sure has been a long time coming, and they're certainly playing coy. Of course, that's one of the things that the Beatles and AppleCorp, the company that manages their assets, has been good about, is playing coy. So, although I don't think that AppleCorp actually runs John Lennon's music. I'm not sure about that. Do you know, Jeff?
You know, off the top of my head, I'm not sure. I know it is handled through EMI, but
it does go through EMI, and it actually could be with AppleCorp. I'm sorry, listeners, I didn't research that.
But you know what's great? Someone is going to let us know.
Someone probably actually will let us know. That's right. One of our listeners will correct us and huzzah for that. So, you know, I love most of John Lennon's solo stuff, and especially his early stuff. And I certainly am a big fan of the Beatles. And our listeners and our readers alike should know that I don't tend to buy a lot of music on iTunes, but with the advent of iTunes Plus, this is the kind of thing that I would actually be quite likely to buy. So I don't know. This is good in my opinion.
You know, I think it's a good thing too. And part of what makes this such a good thing is that I have always assumed that before we'd see all of the Beatles music online and at the iTunes store, we would first see solo work show up. And we've had three of the four, and now finally this week, John Lennon, the fourth, is available at the store too. So to me, that was a milestone point that we needed to reach before we'd actually see the Beatles recordings available. So who knows?
Right. Yep, who knows? Definitely, at least a step in the right direction. And so, again, another huzzah. Let's move on to the iPhone clone.
Yes, the iPhone clone. I found this to be very interesting, not so much because there's an iPhone clone being developed in China, and it doesn't even matter that it's China. It's just that it's being developed. That's pretty much a no-brainer. I expected to see something. What I do find very interesting about this is that the company is trying to take what Apple did with the iPhone and enhance that and make a device that does more than the device it's emulating.
Well, you know, I actually have to disagree. I mean, it's not going to do more. It's going to be running some other crappy mobile phone operating system that's already on the market, and they all suck. I mean, you know, no one's been able to do this thing right until Apple's come along. And keep in mind, I'm not claiming to be an expert in the Trio or the BlackBerry devices, but the research that I've done, I'm gonna stand by my position there. The other operating systems suck, and these guys are making some. I mean, the only thing they can really copy is the industrial design, and the rest of it is going to be, you know, just crap that's already on the market.
You know, you're actually quite likely right. The thing that I'm really watching on this one, though, isn't so much whether or not they can make something that's as good as the iPhone, because frankly, I don't think they can. And that's because most of these companies that are out there trying to make all these knockoff products, they don't get what the product really is and what the product really does. So, you know, yeah, in that respect, I totally agree with you. They are not going to make a product that can really compete with the iPhone. I just find it very interesting that they're trying to take that industrial design that Apple has and pack more features into it than Apple offers with the iPhone already. Now, I don't think that's going to ultimately be a huge deal, because you're right. We're dealing with what's probably going to be a turd of an operating system. And it's going to have applications that are designed by engineers that have probably never interacted with humans except for the time when they were actually being born. So we're going to have these horrible interfaces, and we're going to see lots of products with real crappy design, but look like the iPhone. But I think that what we're seeing here might be the beginning of a trend where companies at least attempt to take what Apple is making, and instead of merely mimicking it, they'll try and mimic those features, but then add in more of their own to make the device seem more appealing to consumers.
Well, and that's exactly what happened with the iMac when it was first released back in the day. Do you remember Future Power and its E1? No, I'm sorry, it's the E-Power.
The E-Power. Yes, actually, I do remember that. And
that thing was as close to an exact knockoff as can be without it, you know, having been basically cast from a plaster cast.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. That's the iMac clone that came out that included a floppy drive. And when Apple sued the company, their defense was that because the iMac doesn't have a floppy drive, it can't actually be a real computer because all computers have floppy drives.
I don't remember Future Power making that.
Maybe
argument.
That was eMachines that made that claim.
That might have been eMachines. eMachines was the other company. It was basically eMachines and Future Power. And I think a third company tried to clone the original iMac, and Apple ended up squashing each one of them in the courts, saying that they basically couldn't copy their industrial design. And they won. But the difference is that they were pursuing those companies, I think, in Taiwan and in Japan and in the U.S., companies with strong IP protections in place. In China, it's a whole other ball of wax. You know, you can buy... China does little or nothing to stop the billions of dollars of rampant piracy that occurs in that country. They don't care. They're not interested in protecting Western companies' copyrights. And
very true.
You know, it'll be very interesting to see if Apple can do this. And the difference between now and back in the mid to late 90s when these companies were trying to copy the iMac is that China wasn't the place where the electronics companies were set up. It was all being done in Taiwan, and you know, like a lot of production and manufacturing was leaving Japan and going to Taiwan. And now we have a lot of these things are rising in China, making something like this a lot more likely. And of course, you know, you've got this whole culture that it's okay to steal anything you want and make a buck from it. In terms of the technology companies. So I don't know. I think that Apple's going to have a much harder time stopping this sort of thing in China.
That's very possible. Now, another thing about this whole China company copycat thing is that if you look at the evolution of how this has progressed, when China first started doing the copycat thing. And by China, I really mean companies in China and not the government. I mean, they started with simple things. It was like they were doing knockoff clothing products. And it's been getting more and more sophisticated over time. And, of course, now they're doing these very sophisticated knockoffs of high-end tech products and potentially soon their iPhone knockoff.
And software.
Yeah, and
you
software.
Know, you can buy pirated versions of Office for, you know, a couple of bucks.
Right. And my feeling is that we will not see China change from being a copycat economy, in essence, where they're knocking off other products to make their own, to becoming true innovators and developing their own products that are potentially as good or better than what you can get from companies outside of China until the government actually really starts cracking down and enforcing intellectual property rights, copyrights, things like that. And I really don't see that there's an incentive for the government to do that because the knockoff industry is bringing so much money into the country anyhow. Why would they want to change that?
Well, there is that, you know, there are all sorts of issues and I won't claim to sit here and be even an armchair expert on China because I'm hardly not, but hardly that. But, my feeling is that China doesn't like to be told what to do as a government and especially by the Western powers that China feels like it's the, It is the superpower of the world, and that it should be the superpower of the world, kind of like our current administration feels that way. And this IP issue is something that largely doesn't it's not going to affect them one way or another, and so they don't care. Where they have actually brought some power of the government down on IP protection has been at the behest from great pressure from Western governments that basically, you know, want to talk trade sanctions or some other kind of issue with the government, and that's what sort of prods them into acting on this. But so far, they really haven't done much to stop any of these things. Now, that said, if this company is able to bring a product like that to the Chinese market, because, you know, the Meizu is not likely to be able to bring this kind of product to Europe or Japan or Taiwan or even the United States. Of course, you know, the Chinese market is huge, and
right,
if they can bring it to market in China, they can make some money on it. But my rambling point is that it will be interesting to see that even if they could bring it to market somewhere outside of China, whether or not it would actually sell that well. I kind of doubt it.
You know, the part that would make the Mini One potentially a competitive product outside of China, in my opinion, is the price, and that's it. But I think most of the people that are really interested in the type of product that the Mini One represents may very well also be more interested in the quality of the product, which would drive them away from the Mini One potentially and to the iPhone or the phone that LG is making with Prada, you know, products like that.
Right. And let's not ignore the fact that whatever kind of changes Apple brings to the cell phone market, you know, some of those changes are going to be companies just trying to copy what Apple's doing. Certainly, that's just the nature of the marketplace.
Right.
But some of those things, companies are going to be able to implement a lot of what Apple has done in different ways, in ways that aren't copies of the iPhone or other Apple products, and that will be a good thing. Apple is bringing change to this market, whether or not it likes it. And for other companies to be able to learn from what Apple has done is going to make the marketplace stronger. It's going to be better for consumers.
Oh, absolutely. And with what we have with the iPhone right now, I think it's already made a very dramatic impact on the market. And as time progresses, when we have months and then later years of iPhone development and iPhones in the wild, it's going to be a huge thing. The limited time that the iPhone has been available and then the limited time that I've actually had one in hand has completely changed how I deal with so many of the things in my life. And it's just the way everything goes together, it makes that possible. And that's something that a lot of these other companies are really going to have to pay attention to and learn how to do if they want to make products that can be life-changing like the iPhone is.
That's right. You know, the last thing I'd ever want to see, even as a person who holds a very, very small stake in Apple, for full disclosure's sake, the last thing I'd want to see is Apple being the only company that could make a phone with contextual menus and a touchscreen only interface. I mean, I that's the last thing I want. I want Apple to be pressured into having to improve. I want other companies to be doing things that make Apple rethink what they're doing. I'm by no means being a protectionist here.
Yeah, actually, that would be a great thing. And if there are other companies out there that are pushing Apple because they're producing really good, innovative, and desirable products as well, then that really does force Apple to have to continue to innovate. And that's a really good thing. And if you look at other markets where there's been competition for a while and then one company produces something that's just like the holy grail of whatever the product is, until someone else comes along that actually makes something that truly competes with that product, a lot of times you see that market just kind of stagnate. And a perfect example, because this is my background, the whole graphic design industry, the whole deal with Quark Express being the market leader in page layout for years and years, they didn't innovate after a while because they didn't have to. There was no competition. Adobe releases InDesign, and all of a sudden there's a competing product, and the whole market has exploded as both of these companies are just racing to release the next latest and greatest before their competition does. And it's been a very good and healthy thing. And of course, we need to have that in the computer industry, the cell phone industry, everywhere, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that Adobe and Quark have both benefited from that competition. Certainly the consumer has benefited.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I'm all about having a competitive marketplace.
And that particular riff means it's time for the request line, the segment where we talk about the topics that you pick. This week's request line topic comes from Trevor W., who phoned the request line to ask about his options in the Apple world.
I'm a longtime Windows user, and one of the things I love about my PC is how customizable it is. What kind of options do I have when it comes to Apple products to maintain any level of customizability?
That almost sounds like a loaded question, doesn't it, Jeff?
Just a little bit.
Well, but I think it's, you know, it's actually something that I've heard quite often from the PC world. You know, there's a lot of folks who like the fact that they can, or and from my perspective, have to, you know, play with their machines in order to get their machines to do what they want to do. And I personally understand that. I mean, I've maintained for a long time that Windows-based PCs and to a similar extent Linux-based PCs are the hot rod car that's up on blocks from an earlier age. It kind of fills the same role with a lot of people who want to tinker.
You know, yeah, you're right. But I think that customization on the Mac side is a different thing than customization on the generic PC side. And that's because there's two different ways to approach it on the Mac. The first one is you have a basic system where you can do simple things like a new hard drive, more memory, and then you have the rest of the customization which happens outside the box through FireWire and USB. Then you have the other end of it where you have to roll up your sleeves and go inside the machine, which is what I think most PC users think of when they're looking at customization. And in that sense, you do have more options with a Mac Pro because you can take the side off, you can add in cards, you can swap out the video board, things like that. So I think it all depends on which perspective you want for customization.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. And, when I first heard this comment come in, the smart-ass comment that leapt to the top of my head was, oh, are you kidding? There's all kinds of customizability with Apple products. For instance, Steve Jobs will let you put any kind of music you want into iTunes or your iPod. part of my smart-assness has long been that Apple wants you to think differently Steve's way. That's an honest assessment. You know, Apple wants to make technology that helps you do or make cool things and get out of your way while you're doing it. And they're making a product that is, thought out from the beginning to be, pretty much a complete product. And it still baffles me why Apple had a theme engine that they disabled and then sent cease and desist letters to sites that were actually working on making their own themes that used that theme engine. I mean, things like that. It just utterly baffles me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I certainly respect and appreciate and love the fact that my Mac just works, that my iPod just works, and that my iPhone just works.
It's a double-edged sword. We have the part where everything just works, and that's because Apple maintains insanely tight control over the products. On the other hand, if you open that up so that people have a lot more options for customization, then we start to slip down that path where we don't have the just plug it in and it works simplicity.
Yeah, possibly. I'm actually playing a little bit of devil's advocate to our own position here.
Okay.
And that is that because of Mac OS X's Unix foundation and access to the terminal, I think there's a lot of things you can do with Mac OS X that you can customize to a far deeper level than you could with Windows, say.
True.
But, you know, when it comes to something like, you know, iTunes or the iPod or the look and feel of your Mac, there are just a lot fewer options. I mean, you have something like Quicksilver, which is what my wife uses to in place of the Finder, and you know, there are some things out there that you can do to customize your Mac experience, but they're different. And in some ways more far-reaching, and in other ways less far-reaching than you're going to find in the Windows or Linux world. And when it comes to something like your iPhone, it is take it or leave it or hack it.
Right. Which actually, to a degree, you see a lot of that with other cell phones as well. And I'm not saying that to make excuses for Apple for keeping the device closed, just as an observation. But jumping back a little bit, you mentioned that your wife uses Quicksilver, which is just a stunningly cool product. And it's a wonderful utility to let you just really do so much more with the way you interact with your computer. But it's not the only way to do it. For example, I use DragThing. I live and die by DragThing. It's a fantastic tool for me. And it's a different way to hack in and access the system than Quicksilver is. And it's you just have so many options at the software level for the way you interface with the with OS X. I see that as a great customization opportunity as well.
Well, I think that's I mean those are fantastic points, and you know, the reality is that I mean, you know, it kind of sounds like this guy is maybe interested in switching over, but you know, doesn't want to necessarily leave his. You know, his comfort zone of the Windows world, where he knows everything and, you know, knows how to tinker and enjoys that tinkering. And it's definitely coming to the Apple world. And I'm going to say Apple world instead of the Mac world, because really, you know, Apple is so much bigger than the Mac these days.
Right.
Coming over to that, it's a different kind of thing. There will be ways for you to, you know, really own your machines, but they're going to be a lot different in some cases than what you might be used to from the Windows world. And, you know, from my perspective, that's okay. I think that there's a great place in the world for those who want to use Windows and those who want to use Linux and those who want to use Macs, and, you know, plenty of room for all of us. And, you know, fortunately, there are a lot of sites out there that are dedicated to that sort of thing. You know, we've got folks in our own forums that talk about tips and things like that. And we have the Hardcore Unix forum for people that really like the Unix side of things.
Right.
And I recently, I think we mentioned this last time, but I spent several hours with Michael Johnson from iPhone Alley, who helped me jailbreak my iPhone so that I could use it as a modem during the Apple media event. So, you know, those things are out there. There are resources out there to do this sort of thing. It's just, it's different.
It is different. And so, okay. So do you think it would be safe to say, Trevor, your Mac will be as customizable as you want it? The important thing to remember, just like using Windows versus OS X, you have to have a different mindset about how you use the entire product.
Yep. I think that's very fair. Well said.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right, that's the request line. If there's something you'd like to hear Jeff and me discuss in the Context Machine, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com or call 206-202-0647. As always, we'll close the Context Machine with our listener comments. This week, our listener comment comes from several places, including the Mac Geek Gab's own Dave Hamilton. Not everyone agreed with Jeff's assessment last week that Apple's new glossy display iMacs aren't a good choice for color-critical design work, including Dave, who said,
"Hey, guys. Dave Hamilton from the Mac Geek Gab. I was listening to your August 13th podcast, about the new iMacs and your complaint that they come with glossy screens only, prohibiting designers and graphic artists from using them for their work because of the color issues with the glossy screens. And to that, I have an answer, and it is plug in an external monitor. The iMacs will and always have supported external monitors, and you could plug in just about anything you wanted into that port, so long as it matched the specifications or was less than the specs of the external video port. So that would be my thought on that, and you could still do that more cheaply than you could buy a Mac Pro, and then you get the benefit of having two monitors, one that you could do your color work on and one that you could have all your palettes and or you know, email and maybe your web browser and have two things going, and it's a beautiful little setup. So that's my thought. Have a great day. Bye.
And AWR listener Sean Holcomb agrees with Dave. He emailed us to say, among other things, the ability to simply plug in almost any monitor and extend your desktop to include two displays is a strong feature that does not get enough coverage regarding current Macs.
Ray Zeiss added his own two cents on our iMac coverage, saying, guys, love the podcast, but I think you have been fooled by the Apple PR machine regarding aluminum iMacs. More than likely, the environment has nothing to do with Apple's decision to move from white plastic to aluminum. Instead, the two most likely factors were heat transfer capabilities of aluminum and response from marketing focus groups. Well, let's see. I guess all three of these folks have some good points.
They do. Now, I'm going to start by saying I stand by what I said, but I will clarify that, which is one of the new iMacs out of the box and just as itself is not a great machine for graphic design because of that glossy display. Now, everyone else had really great points that you can add in an extra display, and that's a totally valid point, and it's something that I should have thought about and should have said. So, yeah, thank you for bringing that up. That's a very valid point.
Well, they are valid points, and just to be a little bit repetitive here, it absolutely warrants and bears saying that you do have this other option. However,
yes,
I do think that your original complaint is a good one. Now, I know a lot of designers certainly like to have two monitors of some sort, and that's certainly the case. But if you're buying an iMac with a 24-inch screen, for a lot of people, that's going to be all they want on their desk. And if they've got to have a second display just for color correction, that kind of makes the iMac pointless. You might as well have either a desktop unit or a laptop or something like that, because that means that for those designers, the iMac's display won't be their main display, making it completely redundant to a certain extent. So anyway, nonetheless, I'm very glad that these guys pointed that stuff out, because it definitely warrants mentioning. And I think that Ray's comments about the aluminum are also interesting. I'm sure that he's at least partially right, but I think that I personally think that Apple and Steve Jobs are concerned about the environmental aspect, and they're concerned about their reputation as an environmentally conscious company.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Apple's really paying a lot more attention to environmental concerns than they used to. And sure, I bet that the decision to go to aluminum because it transfers heat more effectively than plastic, or so I assume, probably did play some role in that. But I think that it really is a lot about the environment. And actually, one thing we didn't bring up, as I recall, last week, it probably has a lot to do with aesthetics as well. It just looks cool, so that's a reason to do it.
Yeah, absolutely, and let me play devil's advocate to myself.
Please.
And to you. Certainly, Apple is a master of spin. So certainly, it is not beyond Apple to play up the environmental aspect to a far greater degree than it might have actually played in the actual development.
You know,
that is certainly possible. Apple has a fantastic track record of doing that sort of thing.
And actually, they would be foolish not to take advantage of something like that. I mean, if the only reason they decided to put aluminum on the outside of the iMac was simply because it looks sexy, fine. But then to have the foresight to say, well, let's call it an environmental thing because then we look a lot better. Well, that's why they have these PR people that make lots of money so that they can come up with these things. And I'm not saying that's what they did, but sure, I mean, it's totally a possibility, and I'm sure that there was some of that type of spin in the whole mix.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the Ray's comments, all three of the comments that we discussed this week were just outstanding, and we appreciate you adding to the discussion that we have here on the Apple Weekly Report. And I think that's the listener comment theme coming back.
Yep. I think
there it is.
And if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com or phone 206-202-0647. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thank you for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. And remember, get your forum post in so that you can get entered into the drawing for those free earphones.